Episode 20. Let's go.
Welcome to the EMS Handoff, your source for all things EMS. And now, let's welcome to the show your hosts, Bradley Dean, Eric McCullough, and David Blevins.
Hello and welcome to the EMS Handoff Podcast. This is David, and along with my co-host Bradley Dean and Eric McCullough, we are your source for all things EMS. And today we bring together another distinguished guest, an awesome anniversary event as well. First time that we're kind of kicking this off. So we're going to have a lot of fun conversation today. But before we do, like we always do, we're going to kick it to the West part of our, I guess, hosting area. And you know, even though it's a Middle Tennessee area, Eric McCullough, how's my co-host from the West doing?
Oh, good. Enjoying more sunshine and more warm weather. So that's kind of nice. I'm not liking the potholes that the ice created on 24. Whatever. Hey, it fixed my radio.
I'm right there with you on that. And we had an event today and they did it outside because we had a bunch of people and they wanted to make sure we increased our distancing. So we're sitting outside and it's about 75 over here in East Tennessee. So can't really complain a whole lot, right?
Nice.
All right. So let's go over to the east side. Bradley Dean, keeping it up in Rowan County over there. How you doing?
Doing great. East Side Express is nice, sunny, and warm over here today. It's 75 and beautiful outside.
Now, before we introduce our guests this evening, we'd like to thank our podcast partner, the Journal of Emergency Medical Services. They've been a tremendous partner with the EMS Handoff Podcast. And while we serve as your source for all things EMS in the podcast verse, GEMS has been an industry leader for a long time. So make sure to go by and support their website and all their efforts to keep the industry informed. And not only that, you can also find out about our fellow podcast hosts. And just remember, GEMS has recently expanded their podcast platform. So if you're trying to find us, go to EMS Today on either Google, Apple, or Spotify. Lastly, before we get started, we'd like to introduce you to our EMS Handoff merchandise line in cahoots with our apparel partner, Pursuit Outfitters. The EMS Handoff Podcast is partnered with Pursuit Outfitters to offer a line of comfortable and stylish EMS Handoff gear with t-shirts, long sleeve shirts, even my favorite, I finally got me a hoodie. Like you there, Bradley Dean, and that's most comfortable. So make sure and check out Pursuit Outfitters at pursuitoutfitters.com/EMS handoff. Now, much ado about everything. We've got a great event today. Bradley Dean, kick us off.
So today we're honored to have Oren Barzilay, the president of the FDNY EMS Local 2507. He was born in Israel, raised in Forest Hills, Queens, New York. And as he grew up, he was fascinated by the New York City first responders. And during his childhood, an EMS crew had a staging area right outside of his house. And he was intrigued by their many stories. He joined the Forest Hills Volunteer Ambulance Youth Corps at the age of 16. It was then that he decided that EMS was his calling. Oren, thank you for joining us. So you joined at the age of 16 while you were still in high school. How did that impact you and drive you into the profession?
You know, at the age of 16, our hormones are already high. And once it connected with the adrenaline, you know, I just kept going. You know, I would finish school at 3 p.m., see those guys waiting at the corner for their next assignment. I would chit-chat with them. You know, they gave me some tips of how to get involved. So I joined the local community volunteer corps. And ever since then, I've been in an ambulance.
So where did you, you went to college there in New York as well, didn't you?
Yes.
Where did you go?
I went to Nassau County Community College. I picked up a major of criminal justice, but I never finished it.
So you went to work for New York City EMS in 95.
Right.
And you were there 95 and then when they merged. So what can you tell us about that?
You know, in 1995, it was still known as New York City EMS. On the side of our trucks, it said actually New York City EMS. And 6 months later, the merge took place. And, you know, I was still young. I'm in my early 20s. I really didn't know much about the politics behind it or why it was happening. And as the weeks went by, they started recalling all our trucks to change the wording on the ambulances. And, you know, when my truck came back, I was one of the first ones actually to get it back, and it said FDNY on it. So it was a little weird because everybody knows us as New York City EMS. And when we go on calls, you know, we would get these looks from these firefighters like, the hell is this? You know, like, you know, the, well, what is it, why does it say FDNY on it? So it was a little challenging in the beginning, you know, because in the beginning it was very stressful because, you know, just like our side didn't want to go into them, they didn't want us to come into their side. So there was a lot of animosity in the beginning, a lot of tension. But as the years went by, things got better as far as the relationship, because most of our men and women today in the FDNY on the suppression side are former EMTs and paramedics from us. So the love relationship is still there, but in the beginning, it was very rough.
So in 99, you became a member of local 2507.
So I was a member from day one that I joined the FDNY, but I was never engaged. You know, again, I was 22, 23 years old. I don't know what a union is. It's my first job, my first real job. But working the streets in Harlem, New York City, you go along with the police department and the firefighters on calls. So as the months go by, you know, you develop relationships with them, and then all of a sudden you see people fall off calls, and you're like, what happened to John? How come he's not here today? You know, from the firefighter side, let's say. And the next day you would ask, what happened to Steve from the police department, from the local precinct? And everybody said, oh, they're retired. I was like, oh, they're pretty young. What do you mean they're retired? You know, so I started questioning, when do I get to retire? And they basically told me, till you die. So the retirement age for us was 62 at the time, when police officers and firefighters have a 20-year pension. So you can come on the job at the age of 21 and be gone by the time you're 41. So, you know, that kind of intrigued me. When I joined in at 22 and to be told I got to work till 62, that didn't sit very well. You know, I got to do this for 40 years. So I started to get involved with my union in 1999. A few months there later, I became a delegate. And as the years went on, I finally ended up as the president in 2017.
All right. So we know that March 17th, 2021 marks the 25th anniversary of the FDNY and EMS merger. And, you know, so we're going to talk a little bit about that merger today. But one of the things that I really want to look at is EMS across the country has become an important part of the healthcare system. In New York, that's no different. You're an integral part of the healthcare system there. And FDNY EMS has expanded over the years and is one of the largest EMS agencies in the country. What can you tell us about the growing impact of EMS, the workforce there in New York?
Would you mind breaking it down a little more as to?
Sure. So roughly, you know, how many calls does FDNY EMS respond to a year?
Yeah. So, you know, the department reports that we respond to 1.5 to 1.6 million calls last year. However, let's say you have incidents where there's multiple patients, they still consider it one call. So if you have a multi-car accident where you have 10 patients, it's still considered one call. So I believe that we are very close to 2 million calls a year. It's just that the way they count those runs is a little different than what fire does. So we average close to 2 million calls a year.
So with that as well, sir, I'm going to go ahead and expand on that just a little bit more. So FDNY EMS, because of that, as you just mentioned, you know, anywhere from about 1.5 to 2 million calls or patients transported every year, that makes FDNY one of the largest EMS employers in the country, and which is one of the reasons we're coming as well here. You know, they took this on 25 years ago, the merger of the New York City EMS and FDNY. And so there's a lot of things there, but the basic statement is FDNY EMS is one of the largest EMS providers in the country.
Right. It is, we have over 4,000 members as of today, nearly 4,500. Including officers. So it is a big service. I don't believe we have enough manpower, even though it's that big. You know, we're averaging anywhere between 4,000 to 5,000 calls a day. So it's still busy. You know, it's a busy system.
And I think, David, were you going to follow up with any more on that?
No, go ahead, sir.
No, okay. Because I had something I was going to ask you about, Oren. We know that EMS developed mostly out of necessity, and with that development, the standards began to develop as well. So even into the mid-1990s, response times were often extended due to lack of resources, funding, infrastructure, things like that. And you were present during the merger, and you've experienced a lot of that change. How were the response times prior to the merger, and how have things evolved over those last 25 years?
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought that up. So, you know, our response time back in the day was over 10 minutes. I mean, that was awful for somebody who was in a cardiac arrest. It was terrible. But today, we are averaging a little over 6 minutes. On priority calls. So when I joined the department, there was roughly 2,700 EMTs and paramedics. So you can say we almost doubled in size since then, and that improved the response time. You know, more units, the quicker we get there.
And so that right there just simply means, you know, we're kind of the key, as you mentioned, again, 2 million individuals going through the EMS system. You know, we're really one of the keys to, y'all are one of the keys to healthcare in New York City.
Yeah, you know, we are their first line that come in contact with the public, the people who are sick or injured. We are an integrated part of the healthcare system. We're known not just in New York City, EMTs and paramedics around the country as street doctors. You know, our medics are basically bringing the emergency room to your house or to the street corner, wherever you are. So we are the reason why the survivability rate has been increasing because of EMS.
And so it sounds to me like that merger has been really successful, like improving response times, care, management of these emergencies, things like that then.
Yeah, you know, the merger helped us in certain things. You know, the fire department has a big recognition around the country, specifically the FDNY. You know, it's a brand name. So, and then it's managed well by people who are understanding the system and understand what needs to be done to achieve that goal.
Now, just like your story as well, you know, the EMS profession has a rather varied background in development from the military, streets of Pennsylvania, many different areas, including, you know, going back to Nancy Caroline and the origination of a lot of the textbooks. And one of the things we see is EMS is a rather diverse population force, but FDNY EMS has made those strides as well. Your population within the EMS is really relatively diverse, correct?
Yes. So over 50% of our men and women are people of color. Over 30% are women. So we have a diverse agency.
And that, you know, that's helped FDNY overall and their diversity campaign there. But it does seek to say, you know, this profession should be in many areas is open to that diverse workforce. And as you mentioned, they're the ones bringing the emergency department to the streets, no matter whether it's a medical call, you referenced sudden cardiac arrest earlier, strokes, diabetic emergencies, motor vehicle collisions. And we, you know, we've all, any of us that have been around for a little while and have, you know, seen just the large calls such as those in 9/11 when those FDNY EMS responders too, you know, went into the towers to help people that were injured.
No matter what the circumstance, what emergency, what disaster, what terrorist act happens, you know, we're there all the time. And this past year is evidence of how EMS is important, because we were the only ones going into people's home under COVID, under this pandemic. You know, police officers in our city and the firemen, firefighters were told to stand down, wait outside, you know, see what they tell you if they need your help. Otherwise, it was EMS alone.
Well, and that actually goes into one of my next questions itself. So let's talk about that for just a minute. So over the last year itself, the country has been plagued with COVID. And has made a substantial impact on the EMS community itself. So FDNY EMS responders are out there, as you said, going into all these different houses, whether they know that there's COVID or not. So let's kind of talk about that. So what have your personnel have had to endure during this last year of COVID?
You know, it was challenging. It was terrible times for our people. I mean, you know, even though they knew the risk and dangers that was that they were going to face, they still came to work. They still wanted to accomplish what they signed up for. And, you know, a lot of them, even though they were scared, they showed up. There was another side of the story that we had to share with the public, is that these EMTs and paramedics, they're not going home. They're afraid to go home and get their families sick. You know, we became carriers. Nobody was more exposed than us. You know, you're going into a home for a man or a woman with a, let's say they called you for a broken foot or something. But the family member that's in the house with them, you don't know if they have COVID or not. You know, they're not telling you what's happening in the rest of the house. So it was worrisome for everybody. You know, at one point, 2,000 of our men and women came down with COVID. So throughout the year, five have died from it, and three committed suicide. It was very challenging. You know, we didn't have the support that we needed from the city when it came to protective gear. We didn't have the PTSD therapist that we were trying to get. We knew from day one that this insidious disease is not going to be just for our victims that we're going to. We're going to have some psychological effects with this. And nobody listened. And shortly thereafter, three of my men committed suicide.
And some of that is, you know, again, because of their fear, they didn't want to take it to their house as well. So they end up kind of hanging around the station house, sleeping there or in other locations. And they were potentially away from their families for a period on end.
Yeah. You know, I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but, you know, till today, we have men and women who are sleeping in hotels that the department has provided because they understand the fear that people have. So we have men and women that haven't been home in months because of the high risks that they faced.
I was gonna ask about this. So I grew up on 9/11. I was in high school when that happened, and you know, a lot of people know about, you know, not a lot of younger people know about 9/11 because they didn't live through it. So I did. And I'm wondering, did COVID-19 kind of endear FDNY EMS to the public in that kind of that same, not the same way, obviously, but in that very similar fashion where people understood, wow, EMS are the people who are really taking care of us? Or was there any blowback from the public, or was the overall public sentiment from that response?
So on that tragic day, September 11, 2001, that was one of the worst day our country faced. But when COVID hit, you know, our fire department took a huge hit on September 11. Over 300 firefighters lost their life. So when COVID hit, that was EMS September 11 every day. You know, there were days where we responded to 800 cardiac arrest calls every day. You know, our men and women, some of them saw 12 to 16 bodies a day, dead bodies that they had to work on. You know, we average one or two cardiac arrest calls in a day or two, but to do 12 to 16 codes in a day, it was our September 11. And it was acknowledged by the city that it was one of the most trying times for EMS.
So as a result of this, like I know 9/11 created a recruitment effort that probably, unparalleled for the military, for EMS, for all of the organizations. It got me in the Army. It got probably, some of the other guys here in the military too. But, we often hear, especially around, my area and stuff, of EMS agencies having a difficult time recruiting and retaining individuals. It seems we hear across the board that pay is one of the reasons that agencies have a difficult time retaining individuals. And I was just wondering, how does FDNY EMS compare with other professions like firefighters and law enforcement?
So, you know, they are just now acknowledging that there's a retention issue with EMS and that there's a hiring issue with EMS. You know, we train anywhere between 400 to 600 EMTs every year, 120 paramedics every year. And as quick as they come in, that's as quick as they leave. Nobody wants to stay here. The average EMT survivability in New York City is 3 to 4 years, and they move on to other fields. We are the lowest paid first responders in New York City. So anytime an opportunity comes in, whether it's sanitation, corrections, police, fire, they jump on it. Those agencies make nearly double of what we are earning. So we have been campaigning for the past 2-3 years through media networks and our city council. We brought this issue to light, and we are now negotiating. Hopefully this can be resolved, but you know, there's a promotion within the department to become a firefighter. And every 4 years that door opens, and roughly 1,200 of our men and women leave to the fireside. Top paid EMT here makes $50,000, and a firefighter makes $110,000. It's simple math, you know. They just jump ship at any opportunity that comes to them. And many of our men and women are, like you said, are from the September 11 era. They saw this on TV, and that's what they wanted to become, part of an agency that was involved during that time.
Yeah, and that's pretty much what because I wondered if there were other factors. Does seem that there's always going to be some type of disparity between workforces, and I didn't know if that was that the only thing at play, or if maybe they saw the fire side and they're like, hey, I want to do suppression for a little bit, or maybe the law enforcement angle. And maybe there's some burnout on that, but it seems to be that they have some of the similar characteristics that you would see in some other EMS services. But that's a good thing to know.
Yeah, no, we even have police officers who leave the force and become firefighters. The pay, the work schedule, the risks are lower. Being a police officer. So, you know, the benefits are better. It's a better environment to, you know, you get to sit down with your colleagues, have dinner. You know, us on the ambulance, we sit on the truck at a street corner. We're not allowed to go to a house or sit at a station. They're breathing down our neck every day. What are you doing here? You know, go to your area. So the overall atmosphere on the fireside, and I can't speak any negativity about that, is that they have, camaraderie among them, and they look out for each other. So most people that come to EMS, for us in New York City, they know there's a back door channel to become a firefighter. There's two ways to get into New York City Fire Department. One, it's the civilian test, and one through EMS. So if you're a civilian, you scored 100 on the test, and I'm in EMS, and I scored a 70 on the test, I'm getting in before you, even though you scored 100. So, which kind of lowers the standards for EMS. You know, they're using us to get into a job. They're not here for the main reason of becoming a career EMS.
And can I ask you, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, even though a lot of the men and women leave this job, you will never hear anybody say that this was a bad job, EMS. This is the best job in the world, you know? You get to touch another human. You get to save another human. Where else can you, say I made a difference today? I delivered a baby. I brought back somebody's grandma. I brought somebody's dad back. You know, there's so many positive things about us. It's just that the pay is what distinguishes us between the other agencies.
I want to jump in because I read an article, I think it was posted yesterday or the day before, and I think it was you that said something about patient outcome is determined by experience.
Absolutely.
And
you want me to elaborate on that? Or
yeah, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so there's two studies. One by, I think it's the Pennsylvania University. I can get you the study if you want. That shows that experienced EMTs and paramedics working on critical patients have a significant better patient outcome because of they know how to see the signs and symptoms of a critical patient than somebody who just got on the job. So for instance, if I just got on this job and you had a heart attack, and I don't know how to distinguish whether you're having a heart attack or you just, you know, having a muscle pain on your chest. And if I don't react to that quickly and you know, provide interventions, you may end up in a medical facility longer than is needed because I couldn't catch that quickly enough. You know, so that study proved that the more experienced EMTs and paramedics working on a critically ill patient or injured patient, the better outcome they have. It's shorter hospital stays, less nursing home admissions. You know, experience plays a big role on patient outcome, and we don't have that. You know, I don't know if you guys use mentor units. Do you guys know what a mentor is? Or yeah, so when I came on this job, I was put on with somebody who had 10, 15 years experience on. So let's say I graduated our academy 6 months ago, and Bradley, you graduating next week. They're going to put you with me because there's no senior member left. You know, our average 70% of our staff has less than 5 years. So it's kids training other kids. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying they don't have the experience. You know, most of our people are in their early 20s. They just graduated high school. You know, and in New York State, they just lowered last year that now you can be 17 to be an EMT. You know, because nobody wants to do this job. So they figured, let's lower the age limit. You know, we'll train them while they're in high school. And then we'll ship them right into the EMS field when they come out. How do you send a 17-year-old to treat somebody with a gunshot wound to the head or somebody with a knife stuck in his back? You know, these are things that I don't think they thought of. Other professions, you have to be at least 21 before you join to become a police officer or a firefighter. It's not that much of a difference, but you at least experience life a little more. I don't think anybody in high school should be doing this job yet, but that's just my personal opinion. Just answer your question. Studies have, and we had our own study in FDNY, that when an EMS supervisor is on a scene of a cardiac arrest, they get to watch what the crews are doing. And if he feels that they're not doing the right compressions or the right drugs or whatever, the results were much higher in survivability on cardiac arrest when an EMS supervisor was on scene.
That is pretty interesting. So we know that pay certainly is recruitment retention issue. I want to circle back to something else that we were talking about just a few minutes ago, because you mentioned that a lot of your personnel, you know, stayed away from their families. You know, we're coming up on the year anniversary of COVID, not yeah. just the 25th anniversary of the merger,
right.
But you know, a lot of the people were sleeping in their personal cars. You know, we heard stories about them, you know, sleeping on station house couches. I had the opportunity, New Year, I was actually in New York and New Jersey and, you know, got to see a lot of the stuff that was going on. But while we've made great strides over the last month or so with the current pandemic, I think we're probably going to see other, you know, pathogens emerge in the future. We're going to have other issues. What kind of facilities does FDNY EMS have to accommodate personnel during times like this, well, when they're working long hours and everything else?
We don't. We don't have sleeping quarters. We don't have any of that. And but before I get into that, we were just given an alert last week that Ebola is back. So yeah, we are now on alert to watch out for Ebola patients. JFK Airport is one of the six entry points to the United States from these countries. So they put our members on alert last week that anticipate this to come back to us now again. We have 35 facilities, 35 EMS stations. Not one station has sleeping quarters. And we've been telling them for years, when you build these stations, at least moving forward, think about sleeping arrangement for these men and women. Falls on deaf ears. But other than because of COVID, and them placing us in hotels, there was never anything done for us.
So we've talked a lot over the last just short little bit already that about the history of FDNY EMS and really kind of the last year. But let's go into the celebration a little bit as well. So this does mark 25 years since the New York City EMS merged out of the Health and Hospital Corporation into FDNY. And, you know, just like every 25th birthday, one of those things, really not birthday, anniversary, because you all were in existence before then. But so what is going on in New York City to honor this rather great anniversary, you know, representing or really bringing focus to EMS?
I think if our city wasn't closed, there would be ceremonies all around. But there is nothing. I mean, we have a funeral coming up this weekend for one of the EMTs that passed away last week, and the department they can't even attend funerals. So our city, even though they're opening up to a certain degree, large events are not allowed. Nothing has been mentioned to us about any type of recognition or ceremony for our 25-year anniversary.
Okay. Well, then that's certainly from us.
I can tell you that the union will be funding stations to hold station barbecues or, you know, anything to bring up morale, but nothing official has been done yet.
Well, from us, my co-host and I certainly want to thank every one of the FDNY EMS, the EMTs, paramedics. We do know you also represent the fire inspectors as well, so don't want to let them out, but focusing on my EMS side. So let's talk about then what's on your all's agenda for the next 25 years of FDNY EMS from the local perspective.
So my team and I, we ran on a platform that we will settle this pay dispute that's been going on since the inception of EMS. For 40 years, we've had this struggle of equity pay. And I don't think anybody has really taken it as serious as we have. I mean, one of the things that we've done is we also suing the city of New York for the pay disparity because we feel that because we have a majority of minorities, Is that the reason why you're keeping our wages so low? You know, so it's in a federal court right now, and we'll see which way that goes. But we are hoping, as we sit through negotiations, we started negotiating again in the past few months, that we can come to a humanly type of resolution to fix this problem. You know, we're not asking to be rich off of this job. We're just asking for livable wages. We're asking for our men and women to have the opportunity to have a $2,000 one bedroom apartment in the city. You know, how do you expect us to live when we're taking home $400, $500 a week? What about food? What about, I don't know, transportation to work, clothing? You know, that you know, there's so many problems with the wages here. So we're hope that's the main goal, is to elevate our wages and, you know, keep up with how EMS evolves around the country. You know, a lot of places have been doing mental health transportations, from what I've been reading lately. You know, it's not police work anymore, and that's something that they're trying to implement on us. I mean, and I understand it, you know, but our men and women are very resistant to it. So, but I know that EMS is going to evolve. There's so many more things that we can do. And, but our biggest goal is to achieve pay parity, pay equality for our men and women.
And so a lot of what you've discussed is things that, you know, as we discussed, Eric and I from Tennessee and Bradley from North Carolina, some of the same things that you're saying are very similar to what we're having here as far as those that are looking for other avenues in the profession, looking for those, that pay equity going from one side to the other. I remember on the fire side, the difference in our local fire department versus the EMS agency surrounding. But it sounds like, you know, one of the largest EMS agencies in the country is on some of the forefronts of this stuff and bring that conversation, if nothing more than that conversation, saying, hey, these are what we're seeing, and we're out there just the same, if not more, in some of these hazardous environments like COVID, going in, as you mentioned, in the houses of people that may have one or more personnel sick and or a family member sick, and ultimately that repeated exposure is going to increase ours. So what is the 2507 looking at as far as helping support the retention issue in EMS, not just the pay equity as being one of the big ones, but what are some other things that you all are seeing that is going to help retain those personnel within the profession?
So just to touch on something you said, you know, every service, police and fire, they have dangerous jobs, you know, and I'm not taking anything away from them. But however, though, you know, a firefighter can see what he's running into. A police officer can see what he's responding to or where he has to enter. They can see what danger is facing them. To a certain degree. In EMS, our bullet is an invisible bullet. You don't know. You can't see communicable diseases. You can't see the deadly disease that's out there. You know, our patients don't necessarily always tell us the truth of what they have. You know, and we understand that. But the point I'm bringing this up is, our job is just as dangerous, if not more dangerous, because there's so many communicable diseases out there. And I think it's time, not just for us, but for the entire EMS community around the country to acknowledge that our job is very dangerous. You know, just because you don't hear it or you don't know about it, it's out there and it's happening. You know, we had a medic died from HIV that she contracted by a needle stick from her patient. So the dangers are out there for EMS. We get assaulted on a daily basis. You know, you don't hear it on the news all the time. Once in a while, you know, we'll air it out. But on the average, we have 200 to 300 EMTs and medics assaulted every day, every year. So, but every day there's an occurrence of one of our members that's either severely injured, permanently disabled, or out of work for a few weeks, few months. So I just wanted to clear that up.
No, that certainly is a very valuable point. And you couple that with one of the things that you mentioned as well, being faced with that on a almost minute by minute basis, not sure what you're going to face next, is also hitting the mental health resilience of these individuals as well. Becoming, as you mentioned, just during COVID, you've identified a couple of individuals there that have taken their own life, which is a huge topic. As you add the responsibilities that we've seen during COVID, such as adding the testing environment, the vaccination requirements, coming into the public health picture with syndromic surveillance and all that, you know, you keep adding and keep adding with some of these conditions. And we see that not only are they just leaving, but they're also causing harm because it's overwhelming.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. I mean, the things that bothers me most about EMS is that it's not acknowledged by politicians or administrators of how dangerous our jobs are. And, you know, it seems like some of our leaders forgotten where they came from.
So we've gone almost 50 minutes now. So Oren, I'd like to give you the opportunity to just kind of wrap up and you know, this celebration of the 25th anniversary of the merger of New York City EMS into FDNY. And any last thoughts? And if you want to let people know how they can reach out to you if they have any questions or ways, you know, one of the things we talk about in our community is just helping celebrate. So if anybody had the idea of something they could do to try to help support the FDNY EMS during this anniversary, your last thoughts, how to communicate with you.
So I appreciate this. And before I touch on that, I just want to touch on one more thing. There is an organization called EMS Labor Alliance. I'm not sure if you heard of them.
I have not.
So we formed a coalition among Pittsburgh, Boston, Cleveland, California, just like the International Association of Firefighters, National Association of Police Officers. You know, they have hundreds of thousands of members. EMS around the country is not organized. We're all doing our own thing in our communities. And I think it's time that we have a sit at the national table in Washington, D.C., where, you know, we can bring our issues down to Washington. I know there's organizations like the NAEMT, there's a few others, but nobody does anything for labor in EMS. So we formed a coalition. It's called EMS LA, EMS Labor Alliance. If anybody wants any information on how to join us, I'll leave my email, oren.barzelay@local2507.com. So I just wanted to touch on that. I think it's time for EMS to elevate across the country.
Well, and we'll certainly add that to the notes so everybody can get a hold of that as well. But continue, sir. Go ahead.
I appreciate it again. As far as the 25-year anniversary. As far as the 25-year anniversary, you know, I want to thank the men and women, not just in FDNY, but all over the country for the great work that they're doing. We are true heroes of our nation. You know, we help bring life back. You know, when that Grand Reaper comes and pulls you, we sometimes pull him back. So As far as being with the FDNY for 25 years, it's been a ride, and I hope that it continues to be a positive ride and that we can finally achieve our goal of equal pay for equal work.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and be one of the first ones to say thank you for coming on the show. We enjoyed having you on, and I'm going to give my co-host an opportunity to wrap up as well. So, Bradley Dean.
So, I will say that, you know, the FDNY EMS is out on the street. When I saw them in over the new year, you couldn't turn a corner without running into them working and doing something. So thank you for what you do there in New York and for all of the providers across the country.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And Eric.
You know, many of our men and women retire to your state.
I know. I've got a few friends down here that are great.
I'm at a point where I'm near retirement, and you may see me out there one day, maybe, I don't know.
We got some lake houses for sale.
just let you know, Tennessee is better than North Carolina. We're not going to say that. We've got the Great Smoky Mountains, and you can go all the way to the east and get water, but you can do that anywhere. We got two lakes.
No, Tennessee is a great state. I'm not going to lie, I was there also.
So. But 3 hours I can be in the mountains. 3 hours I can be at the coast. I mean, hey. I got it all.
Nice.
Eric, go ahead.
Yeah, same thing. I grew up with a complete admiration for FDNY. I'm in my late 30s. And so it's awesome. And it's an honor to be able to even be a part of this podcast with you. So I can talk to somebody who I kind of got out of high school going, well, I want to do something different. I want to make a difference in some way. And I've outlived our own standards, which is around 5 or 6 years of being an EMS. So it's weird. I'm one of the older guys, and it's awesome to be able to say that I'm among peers who should be recognized for the amount of work that they do. So for 25 years to be merged with the FDNY, I think that is awesome. And I also just extend my appreciation to that.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. It really was and is an honor being with you guys today. I hope we could do this again, hopefully sooner than the next 25 years.
Invitation to come back anytime.
Absolutely. This is great. You know, we need to spread the word about how important EMS is all over. It's not just us. You know, everywhere I go, I appreciate the men and women, no matter where it is, you know. So.
Well, and, I did have a chance many years ago at this point, but walking through Times Square, you see those EMS rigs just running down the road, and, you know what's going on inside there. So one last time, thank you again, sir, for coming on. And we're going to go ahead and conclude today and just say that we always look forward to recording these episodes for each one of you. But without your feedback, we do not know what you're thinking. So please make sure to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast platform. But make sure and visit us on Eric's newly created or relatively newly created website for us at emshandoff.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram, and we would like to see you there. So don't forget to go to one of those places. And on behalf of my co-host, Eric McCullough and Bradley Dean, this is David. Take care, stay safe, and always remember the value of your EMS handoff.